Dark clouds, silver linings. In just a few weeks, the COVID-19 pandemic changed America, and Americans rose to the occasion. By Alan W. Dowd. Those who view government as the sole source of all good things have seen during the COVID-19 crisis the creativity, inventiveness, and nimbleness of houses of worship, charities, and businesses. While the gears of government churned into motion, the charitable and business sectors rapidly redirected their energies toward providing emergency relief, caring for those in need, producing medical equipment, delivering supplies, and developing medicines and vaccines. Churches, synagogues, and mosques shifted to live-stream liturgies to feed the soul. Some churches offered drive-through confessions, others drive-through communion, still others drive-up services and sermons. The faith community also met the physical needs of a frightened nation. Christianity Today details how a church in New Hope, Minnesota, refashioned its food pantry into a drive-thru. A Jefferson, Georgia church delivered food to healthcare workers, and a Birmingham, Alabama church supplied groceries to seniors. Golden Harvest food banks in Georgia and South Carolina offered daily meals to go, created a no-contact mobile market, and delivered food to seniors. As Global Impact reports, AmeriCares provided supplies to clinics that serve the uninsured. Direct Relief partnered with FedEx to deliver surgical masks, gloves, and face shields. Matthew 25 Ministries distributed medical supplies to nursing homes. World Vision sent masks, hand sanitizer, and disinfectant wipes to family-serving charities. Mercy Corps helped small businesses develop continuity plans and provide emergency payments. The Salvation Army distributed food, baby supplies, sanitizer, and paper products. Foundations and other charities joined forces to sustain cities and states. Seattle-based foundations launched the COVID-19 Response Fund to distribute grants to low-income residents, healthcare workers, service industry employees, and the homeless. Foundations and charities stood up the Central Indiana COVID-19 Community Economic Relief Fund to provide grants to human services organizations in Indianapolis and neighboring counties. Several foundations formed the NYC COVID-19 Response and Impact Fund to provide grants and interest-free loans to nonprofits. The California Wellness Foundation sent assistance to healthcare workers, seniors, and clinics. The list goes on and on, repeated in state after state. American Legion posts prepared meals, delivered groceries and prescriptions, and opened food pantries. Members called on veterans and their families to see if they had needs or just wanted someone to talk to. The 2019 introduced Buddy Check program assisted thousands across the country. In the business sector, biopharmaceutical firms such as Eli Lilly launched drive-through coronavirus testing for first responders, healthcare workers, essential workers, seniors, and at-risk groups. Roche churned out 400,000 test kits per week. After the Air Force airlifted 800,000 test kits to Memphis, FedEx took the baton and distributed them across the nation. Anheuser-Busch produced and distributed hand sanitizer across the country. Liquor maker Pernod Ricard USA, best known for Absolut Vodka, converted production lines in Arkansas, West Virginia, Kentucky, and Texas to make hand sanitizer. Bacardi and Patron donated millions to support restaurants shuttered by the COVID-19 response. Lego and AT&T donated millions to help families grappling with school closures. Micron donated millions for economic recovery and medical supplies. Honeywell produced millions of extra N95 masks. Likewise, 3M doubled production of N95 respirators, producing almost 100 million per month, and increased production of hand sanitizers and disinfectants. MyPillow shifted operations to producing masks for healthcare workers. Apple donated 20 million masks and began producing face shields. GM, Ford, Tesla, GE, and rocket builder Virgin Orbit started mass-producing ventilators. The NFL donated $35 million to COVID-19 relief. The NBA and WNBA tossed in $50 million. Each MLB franchise donated $1 million to ballpark employees to help them through the months without games. MLB apparel partner Fanatics produced masks and hospital gowns. New York hotels converted rooms into hospital space, increasing capacity by 39,000 beds. Scientists across the United States, including the Army's Medical Research and Development Command, raced to develop a vaccine and identify therapeutic options. Johnson & Johnson plans to begin human testing for a COVID-19 vaccine by September. Moderna could have a COVID-19 drug for health workers in the fall. Through it all, heroes emerged. Grocers and nurses, paramedics and long-haul truckers, UPS drivers and doctors, food pantry volunteers and FedEx pilots, Amazon delivery workers and virologists. The intelligence and power of the people are disseminated through all the parts of this vast country. The French writer Alexis de Tocqueville marveled of the United States in his oft-quoted 1835 classic book, Democracy in America. Instead of radiating from a common point, they cross each other in every direction. Almost 200 years later, that still holds true. 50 states, one nation. Of course, the COVID-19 crisis reminds us that some challenges are too enormous for businesses and charities to address on their own. Those who view government as the source of all our problems have seen the importance of government institutions in preserving public order and public health, providing for the general welfare, and coordinating great undertakings. Related, the crisis reminds us that our federal system makes it difficult to force everyone in every state and every county to get on the same page. Yet this very system encourages the sort of flexibility, creativity, and adaptivity. Characteristics, Tocqueville observed in the 1830s, needed to attack this challenge in a targeted way. What makes sense, what's necessary for North Dakota in battling COVID-19, may not work for New York. And so governors acted accordingly, basing their responses on what their states needed. Some saw this as haphazard. More accurately, it was adaptive and tailored. That's the genius of federalism. The government closest to the people is usually best at serving the people. Moreover, government agencies suspended regulations and allowed medical professionals to move across state lines to help where most needed. Several states issued waivers to allow medical professionals to conduct health services via computer and telephone. Governors collaborated regionally to reopen their states. Still, there are some things only the federal government can do. Governors can triage problems and manage local disaster response. Charities can provide stopgap assistance. Businesses can temporarily shift operations to respond to emergencies. But businesses, no matter how big the profits, charities, no matter how large the endowment, and governors, no matter how populous the state, cannot print money, waive federal regulations, distribute stimulus checks, postpone tax day, stay foreclosures, backstop industries, halt international flights, or speak for and to the entire nation. That's where the federal government comes to the fore. On January 31st, long before most Americans heard of COVID-19, President Trump restricted travel from China and ordered a quarantine of Americans arriving from China. By mid-March, he was framing the government's COVID-19 response as a war. In many ways, the virus has put the United States on a war footing. The president invoked the Korean War-era Defense Production Act to ensure that our healthcare system is able to surge capacity and capability to respond to the spread of COVID-19. He deployed the Army Corps of Engineers to transform New York City's Javits Center into a 3,000-bed hospital staffed by 950 FEMA and Army personnel. He ordered National Guard units to assist New York, California, and Washington in standing up medical stations, expanding hospital bed capacity by the thousands. He dispatched Navy hospital ships, Comfort and Mercy, one to the East Coast, one to the West Coast, each with approximately 1,000 hospital beds and 1,200 personnel. As with Lincoln in 1863, Roosevelt on D-Day, and Bush after 9/11, Trump declared a national day of prayer, asking God for added wisdom, comfort, and strength. The Pentagon issued a call for veterans with medical specialties. 15,000 veterans volunteered to serve again. Congress and the president unleashed $2.2 trillion in emergency spending in response to COVID-19. The tsunami of spending, like the COVID-19 crisis itself, touches every sector and citizen. $1,200 in direct cash payments to individuals, $600 a week in federal unemployment benefits, in addition to state benefits, $454 billion in stabilization loans for businesses, states, and municipalities, $150 billion to help states and cities address COVID-19, $117 billion for hospitals, $45 billion for FEMA, $27.7 billion to bolster colleges and schools, $25 billion in loans for passenger airlines, $17 billion for national security firms, and $4 billion for cargo airlines. To put the $2.2 trillion COVID-19 relief package in perspective, the federal government spent $4.45 trillion in 2019. Total. Whether the threat is a mighty army or a tiny pathogen, great nations spend whatever they need to survive. More spending is inevitable as Washington tries to contain economic damage caused by COVID-19 and reactions to it. Consequence. Reaction is an important word. All that spending comes in the wake of shelter-in-place orders from governors and social distancing guidelines from federal officials. Policymakers issued these directives because public health experts convinced them that shutting down most commercial and public activity was the only way to flatten the curve. That's the term used to describe slowing the spread of COVID-19 by minimizing human-to-human contact, limiting the opportunity for transmission, and preventing an overload of the healthcare system. By early May, there were clear indications these efforts were working. However, by flattening the curve, we flattened the economy. Experts say the COVID-19 crash could reduce U.S. GDP by 25% or more. Already, well over 23 million Americans have claimed unemployment due to the COVID-19 lockdown, the largest spike in unemployment claims in U.S. history. While stocks endured their worst single-day drop and worst first quarter ever as a result of the quarantine. For individuals and markets, fear and uncertainty are deeply damaging. That explains why Trump has tried to find a balance between public health and economic health. "We cannot let the cure be worse than the problem itself," he said, as quarantines crushed America's consumer-driven economy. "Our country wasn't built to be shut down." Trump isn't alone. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo has suggested the quarantine everyone and close everything approach may not have been the best strategy. After almost a month of mass lockdowns, Cuomo called for a modified public health strategy that complements a get-back-to-work strategy, adding, "It's not we're either going to do public health or we're going to do economic development. We have to do both." As the worst of the public health crisis recedes, Washington now faces the enormous economic crisis spawned by reaction to COVID-19. Mushrooming deficits, skyrocketing unemployment, devastated industries, flattened local economies, and all the collateral damage triggered by addressing these challenges. If history is any guide, the U.S. military will sustain some of that collateral damage. After the Great Recession of 2008-2009, federal spending jumped 25% in the span of several months. In response, lawmakers passed the Budget Control Act, which included a sequestration provision aimed at shrinking the deficit. The resulting defense cuts undermined readiness and deterrent strength. Given the deepening deficits caused by the COVID-19 crisis, it's likely that defense will again be in the crosshairs. While the Pentagon is an easy target, consider this. We could eliminate the entire defense budget, $738 billion in fiscal 2020, yet would still face a deficit, $1.8 trillion pre-COVID-19, and wouldn't put a dent in the national debt, $23 trillion pre-COVID-19. If the defense budget becomes a casualty of the COVID-19 crisis, the consequences could be far-reaching. With Russia on the march and China on the rise, America's military needs every tool available to protect the national interest and preserve some semblance of international order. Cause. That brings us to where this crisis began, China. We can't blame Beijing for COVID-19, but we can for its handling of it. What was a manageable public health problem mushroomed into a global pandemic, erasing tens of thousands of lives and trillions of dollars because Chinese authorities failed to act and then tried to cover up their failure. Beijing jailed a physician for warning colleagues about COVID-19. He later died, refused the CDC's offer to help, and ordered local scientists not to share or publish findings about coronavirus genome sequencing. It took several weeks for Chinese officials to quarantine Wuhan, epicenter of the outbreak. During that time, thousands of people left Wuhan for destinations around the world. The University of Southampton concludes that had Beijing taken appropriate action 3 weeks earlier, 95% of COVID-19 cases would have been prevented across China. 1 week earlier would have prevented 66% of cases. That, in turn, would have prevented COVID-19 from becoming a global pandemic. But that would have required China behaving like a responsible power. Instead, Beijing lied about the outbreak's origin date, transmission rate, and death toll. The COVID-19 crisis proves that China's internal political system is an international problem. As the crisis eases, there are signs of a reckoning. Global supply chains are diversifying away from China. There's a newfound and healthy distrust of Xi Jinping's regime. China's willful mishandling of COVID-19 has become a powerful counterpoint to Beijing's claim that business suit authoritarianism is the wave of the future. And there are growing calls for Beijing to face diplomatic and financial penalties for its criminal malfeasance. All of this takes place against a backdrop of the United States trying to cope with the costs of recovery and China trying to exploit America's inward turn. As Henry Kissinger concludes, COVID-19's political and economic upheaval could last for generations. Learning and loss. After 9/11, we were haunted by a host of new worries. Will this stadium, plane, or skyscraper be the next target? How many more indignities, infringements on liberty, screenings, and searches must we endure to guarantee our security? What if all those screenings and searches fail? In the same way, after COVID-19, each flu season will bring new worries. Is it just a cold or something worse? Will some new virus trigger another pandemic, Another panic, another lockdown, another year without all the special moments of springtime. March Madness and opening day at the ballpark. Commencement ceremonies and proms. First Communion and the last day of school. Easter Sunday services and Memorial Day parades. All those moments have one thing in common: large groups of people gathering together. The COVID-19 crisis stripped that away from us. We can be thankful for the technologies that allow us to see, hear, and communicate with one another. Zoom, Skype, and FaceTime have enabled many, but not all, to keep working, allowed many students, but not all, to keep learning, made it possible to conduct banking and some forms of commerce, provide a facsimile of worship services, and offered us a sense of connection. Yet a sense of connection is not the same as real connection. These computer screen connections, faux communities of our digital age, are no substitute for gathering together. What was true in the beginning is true today. It is not good for man to be alone. We are made for real connection, for hugs, handshakes, and high fives. While the crisis has given Americans an opportunity to reconnect with immediate family and share the precious gift of time, just as many of us were kept apart by the quarantines and lost that precious gift of time with parents, grandparents, grandkids, friends, and faith communities. If ever people need real connection and real community, the social support of work, the comfort of grabbing coffee with friends, the joy of visiting grandpa and grandma, the reassurance of sharing dinner with extended family, the peace of visiting a house of worship, it's during a crisis. There's something transcendent about gathering with others who share our beliefs, hopes, worries, and fears. Too many of us perhaps took that for granted before COVID-19. Alan W. Dowd is a senior fellow with the Sagamore Institute. Major outbreaks, epidemics, and pandemics in U.S. history. An influenza pandemic, as defined by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, is a global outbreak of a new influenza A virus that is very different from current and recently circulating human seasonal influenza A viruses. These viruses are constantly changing, making it possible on very rare occasions for non-human influenza viruses to change in such a way that they can infect people easily and spread efficiently from person to person. COVID-19, short for Coronavirus Disease 2019, is similar to influenza in that both cause infectious respiratory illness. Both are transmitted by contact and or airborne droplets. Both can cause fever, coughing, aching, and fatigue. Both can lead to pneumonia, and both can be fatal, especially for individuals with compromised conditions. As this issue of the American Legion magazine went to press, its full impact had yet to be seen. Yellow fever outbreak, 1793. 5,000 deaths in Philadelphia out of a population of around 28,500. Typhoid fever outbreak, 1906 to 1907. 10,771 deaths, mostly in New York. Spanish flu pandemic. 500 million people infected worldwide. 50 million deaths worldwide. 675,000 American deaths, out of a population of 103 million. Diphtheria outbreak, 1921 to 1925. 206,000 Americans stricken. 15,520 American deaths. Polio epidemic, 1916 to 1955. 57,628 American stricken. 3,145 American deaths. Asian flu pandemic, 1957 to 1958, 1.1 million deaths worldwide, 116,000 American deaths, out of a population of 171 million. H3N2 pandemic, 1968. 1 million deaths worldwide. 100,000 American deaths, out of a population of 200 million. H1N1 swine flu pandemic, 2009 to 2010. 1.4 billion people infected worldwide, up to 575,400 deaths worldwide. Up to 89.3 million Americans stricken, up to 402,719 Americans hospitalized, up to 18,306 American deaths, out of a population of 306 million. 2018-2019 influenza A season, up to 44.9 million Americans stricken, up to 766,472 Americans hospitalized, up to 52,664 American deaths, out of a population of 326 million. 2019-2020 influenza A season, October 2019, March 2020, up to 55 million Americans stricken, up to 730,000 Americans hospitalized, up to 63,000 American deaths. COVID-19 pandemic, December 2019 to present, 3,057,957 cases worldwide, 211,894 deaths worldwide, 988,469 Americans stricken, 56,253 American deaths, out of a population of 328.2 million, all through April 28, 2020. Through the years, we have answered the call, and this is just another example of our posts wanting to help our nation as it faces one of the most serious crises in our history. Blair Moran, life member of Henry Meldrum American Legion Post 114 in Sykeston, Missouri, and a member of the Legion's National Legislative Commission. American Legion Post 401 in Troutman, North Carolina, collected 34 units of blood from 38 donors. American Legion family of Post 162 in Lowville, New York, stage a series of pop-up barbecues to show appreciation for truckers, postal employees, and other essential workers in their community. We seek to be proactive and not wait and listen as folks wonder how to provide for their children. I want my community to see us as a vital part of it, as a resource and an asset by what we do and how we serve. Debbie Evans, president of American Legion Auxiliary Unit 192 in Canton, Kansas. Daniel M. O'Connell, American Legion Post 272 in Rockaway, New York, and the Department of New York provided food for the NYPD's 100th Precinct. American Legion Post 391 and VFW Post 6904 in Fortville, Indiana, teamed up to provide nearly 300 Easter baskets and bags containing candy and toys for children. American Legion Auxiliary Unit 192 in Canton, Kansas, provided sack lunches to children after local schools closed. This is what the American Legion does. We contribute to the community. Everything we do is geared toward the community and the veterans. Joe Taney, a member of Able Poff Lithosur American Legion Post 469 in Wrightville, Pennsylvania, to Fox 43. American Legion Post 335 in Sylvester, Georgia, placed 300 U.S. flags up and down the city's main street as a message of hope. American Legion Post 266 in Granby, Massachusetts, delivered care packages for residents of the Holyoke Soldiers Home, who were moved to Holyoke Medical Center during the outbreak. They also made care packages for airmen from Barnes Air National Guard Base in Westfield, Massachusetts, who have been working at the soldiers' home and staying at local hotels during their assignment. Joseph L. Davis, American Legion Post 47 in Havre de Grace, Maryland, reached out to members through social media, urging those needing assistance, getting to medical appointments, or getting groceries to call the post. Post 47 also set up a drive-through food pantry for the community. Boone American Legion Post 4 in Florence, Kentucky, raised $10,000 in less than 3 days to provide lodging and meals to veterans staying at the Fort Thomas, Kentucky division of the Cincinnati VA Medical Center, who had to leave the facility to make room for COVID-19 patients. "We hope we can keep doing this as long as we can get material and people to sew. This is turning into a real community project." Rich Young, commander of Owen Barrett American Legion Post 110 in Mount Pleasant, Michigan, which partnered with the community to produce masks for local healthcare workers and veterans. "You don't have to be associated with the American Legion. You don't have to be a veteran. You don't need any documentation. You don't need ID. If you have a need, we'll feed you." Mike Fowler, chef and activities director at American Legion Post 28 in Spartanburg, South Carolina. American Legion Post 10 in Albany, Oregon, teamed up with Southpaw's Pizza to provide meals for staff and residents at Edward C. Allworth Veterans Home. American Legion Post 146 in Bethlehem, Connecticut, collected masks, gloves, and disinfectant wipes, helping nurses, EMTs, and other healthcare workers. Charles Raymond Fagg American Legion Post and Riders Chapter 328 in Riley, Indiana, offered a free drive-through cookout to the community. American Legion Post 18 in Weehawken, New Jersey, collected non-perishables for veterans in need and the elderly. The post also called its members regularly and brought them their medications and canned goods. "It's not just us. It's not just our community. Not just our post. It's happening all over the world. If you poke us, we all bleed the same." Gabriel Suarez, commander of American Legion Post 397 in Monterey Park, California, which collected essential supplies for veterans and elderly people. Post activities report compiled by American Legion media and communications staff. See more online at legion.org/coronavirus.